This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. And we have a fun episode coming up for you today because we are going to take a deep dive into a living organism.
Ooh, this sounds so intriguing. What problem are we solving today?
How can you tell the age of a tree?
How can you tell the age of a tree? Ooh, this sounds really interesting. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is the wonderful Alexandra Tsai, science writer, photographer, and teacher. And she is going to be teaching us about one of the oldest organisms humans have ever found.
Welcome to the show, Alexandra.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are excited to have you, mostly because you're one of my friends who also writes STEM books. Yay, for STEM!
Yep.
Right? So can you tell us, we always like to ask, how did you get started? Did you always love science as a kid? Or did you come to it later and just say, oh, science is for me?
Yeah, I loved it as a kid. In fact, my mom, she loved taking me outside and everything and showing me things in nature. And one thing I remember is once a Luna moth got caught in the window screen, and it was just this amazing green moth. And, you know, it was that kind of thing. She'd like wake me up in the middle of the night to come and see the Luna moth and show me things.
Great, so, yay mom.
Yes.
Yeah. She was a great mom for a lot of reasons, but that was really special.
That is a terrific one. There is the amount of, I know you're a school teacher, but the amount of talk that you just hear out in the general public of, why doesn't school teach this? Or why doesn't school teach that? And the amount of interaction between parents and kids and the amount of opportunity, like you were just mentioned, of, hey, wake up or climb out of bed. I want you to come see this. Yeah. I do the same thing with my own daughter, especially with astronomical events, being space geek Jeff. You know, if something is happening, a lunar eclipse is happening after her bedtime, well, she's going to get up and see it. So were there any particular ones from growing up that you remember sort of really spurred an interest in science?
Well, the Luna moth really made an impact. But, you know, we would go out and look at stars. Like, I got interested in astronomy from, you know, just going out and observing the stars.
Sure.
Trees, you know, I've always loved trees. And that was one of her favorite things, was to show me trees. And sometimes we'd, like, do a bark rubbing, you know, on the bark of the trees.
Yeah.
And you can tell the species, or, you know, pretty closely from a bark rubbing. Just looking at different patterns and leaves and, you know, simple things like that. But that little kids really have fun with, because it's tactile and artistic. I think that was the other piece. She was, you know, like to make it more artistic as well, as scientific.
That's great. So you can tell the type of a tree just by the rubbing. Tell us more about that. I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, all trees have bark, obviously, and the bark grows in different ways. And has different patterns and ridges, and some bark is rougher and some bark is smoother. And so if you can get an image or an impression from, you know, you could take a piece of paper, put it on the tree and then a crayon and rub on it, then you can see that impression and match it to a picture or, you know, a key in terms of what it looks like.
Wow. So I've never done that. That sounds like fun.
It does sound
it's
like
really
a lot of
fun. Yeah.
You also talked about looking at the different patterns that are on the leaves. So it sounds to me like when you were a kid, you kind of took that extra step looking at the details of what you were looking at.
Absolutely. Because sometimes we think of trees as just being generic. Oh, that's a tree. But if you look at the different species of trees, leaves have different shapes And like, I always wondered, why do leaves have different shapes like that? Like, why would a maple tree have that particular shape compared to an oak tree?
And I've
done a little research on it, and the way that trees in the canopy are designed to catch sunlight, that's why we have leaves. They're like solar panels.
Right.
So, each leaf is a miniature solar panel, and the shape of it is important because they're maximized to catch as much sunlight as possible. So that's an interesting thing for me, especially looking at pine trees, which my most recent book is about the bristlecone pine.
Right.
And those, you know, everybody knows, I think, that a pine needle looks a lot different than, you know, other kinds of leaves, but they still do the same job. They still catch sunlight. They're still miniature solar panels to basically take carbon out of the atmosphere.
Right.
And that builds the tree. That's how the tree grows.
I think that's really intriguing to think about them that way. I've never heard of that. I love that they're little mini solar panels. So do you think, or do you know, does the tree decide how much light it needs, which is why it has bigger leaves or smaller leaves, or maybe there's more of the smaller ones? Like, I think that's very interesting.
Well, I think like everything in nature, plants and animal, I mean, we're probably study animals more as kids, but plants, they're adapted to their environment, just like an animal. Like, so right. Like if you're studying an animal, you know, like a polar bear is adapted to live in a very cold environment with white fur.
Yes.
Different kinds of trees are adapted to live in their environments depending on light and moisture.
Okay.
And so their leaves, you know, have evolved so that they're able to survive best in that environment. And then when you go into a forest, you can see there's different layers of trees. So some trees are more adapted to live in lower light, for example,
right,
than other trees. Like coffee. Coffee is an understory. If you put a coffee plant out in the light, it'll die. It's too much light.
Oh.
I learned that from my own coffee. I planted a coffee plant and I put it outside and it didn't do well.
Because you didn't have another tree over top of it.
Yeah, it wasn't the right environment for it. Yeah.
You gotta love the life of being a scientist.
Yeah.
Even when you don't mean to be.
Yeah.
So bringing us a little bit closer to our question and what we are trying to solve today, can you talk to us? We started talking about the outsides of the trees with the bark and the leaves. Are there any clues on the outside of a tree that help us to determine what the age is?
Yeah. So you can look at the outside of the tree and you can see how tall it is, you know, and how wide it is, maybe how many branches it has on it. But if you wanted to tell the age of the tree or exactly how old it is, you would really have to look inside the tree.
Okay. So I'm assuming the rings, but I don't know where we're going. So how do you look inside it?
So you can look inside a tree a couple of ways. One way, if anyone has ever seen a tree that's been cut down, like with a saw, you can see the trunk and you can see the tree trunk. And on the tree trunk, you'll see rings that are concentric. And what concentric means is there's a middle in the trunk, and then around that middle, there's a ring, and then there's a ring around that all the way out to the edge.
Right.
So that's one way to count rings for a tree. But of course, we don't want to kill a tree to find out how old it is.
No.
Right.
So scientists have a way of doing that. Do you guys know that, how they do that?
No, I don't know that.
No?
I mean, the only other thing that's inside a tree is sap, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yes. So inside of a tree, sap flows up and down. Water has to go up from the ground.
Okay.
And sap is going to flow from the leaves, the little solar panels, because that's what generates and makes sugar.
Right.
And sugar is the food for the tree. And then the tree is going to turn that sugar into everything else that it needs.
Okay.
So it's going to build its roots, its trunk, its leaves, all that body of the tree. It comes from the carbon that's come out of the atmosphere and it's turned into the sugar. So every year the tree grows a growth ring and it's based on the seasons.
Okay.
So trees that live, like say where I live in New York State, we have winter.
Right.
So trees don't have leaves in the winter. I mean, pine trees do, but, you know, other kinds of trees don't. So they're not growing in the winter.
Okay.
So there's going to be growth in the spring and the summer, and then it's going to stop, and then it's going to start all over again. So that growth is 1 year, basically, in a ring.
Oh, okay.
And there's a light and a dark part of the growth ring. And so that's how you can separate the rings, because they go in light, dark,
right?
That's how you can count them. So if you were a scientist and you wanted to know the age of the tree, you use something called a boring bit.
Oh.
So a boring bit is a drill. It's a drill that can go in towards the center of the tree. And then the scientists will pull out what's called a core.
Okay.
It looks like a pencil. It's about the same width as a pencil. And then on the core is made of the tree, right?
Right.
So
yes,
the core is striped. And you count the stripes on the core, and that will give you the age of the tree, because each stripe represents one growth ring.
Ah, we get this now, right, Jeff?
I totally get it, because we had a glacier scientist who described this same process for the age of a glacier. However, I didn't know they took cores out of living trees.
I didn't either.
Which is super cool. I definitely want to see pictures of this. My question about the rings is, why do the color of the rings go from light to dark? How does the tree know to leave us a ring in different colors so that we can count it?
Right. Yeah.
Yes, they're doing that just for you, Jeff.
Yes, just for us humans.
Yeah. Well, in the springtime is the lighter colored ring, and that it's the beginning of the growing season, and there's a lot of water in the spring.
Okay.
And so I'm not really sure why it's a lighter, where the coloration, why it's lighter because of the water. But, you know, the environment is flooded with snow melt. If you live like in Colorado in the mountains, definitely a lot of snow will melt.
Sure.
And then as the summer comes, it gets drier out, and then the ring, there's a darker color of the wood. So the later in the season, it's a darker color. And then this growth stops, right?
Okay.
In the fall, and then this winter, because there's no leaves. And then it will start up again with a lot of water. And so it'll be a lighter color wood.
Huh.
Very interesting. I never knew that.
Okay. Can you talk to us a little bit about, because your book is about pine trees. How are pine trees different from trees that have leaves? Because pine trees, don't they keep their needles all year long?
Yes, they keep their needles all year long. And bristlecones, which are the most amazing and extreme example of a pine tree, because they can live to be 5,000 years old.
Oh my gosh.
What?
I didn't know that. Does that mean they're big and wide too?
An individual tree. No. So that's the amazing thing. Some of them are very big. Okay. And I don't want to leave your question behind, but I was going to mention that the bristlecone needles can live for 40 years.
Wow.
So on a bristlecone, some of those needles will live for decades. And in, you know, in other types of pine trees, they're not just a 1 year thing like leaves. They'll stay on the tree for a few years and then fall. You'd see on the ground some dead needles or dried out needles, and the tree will replace those. So they're not like maple tree where the leaves fall down on the ground and every year, we get the colored leaves in the fall, at least up here in New York State. And then we get brand new ones. So they keep making new ones. But with the pines, they're longer lived. But bringing back to your question on, are they huge trees? No. And scientists back, in the 40s and 50s, when they were looking for the oldest trees in the world, thought they would find them like in the giant sequoias. They thought, these trees are so huge.
Yeah.
They must be the oldest trees.
Makes sense.
And but when they cored them, they're old. Some of them are 2,000 years old, but the bristlecone pines are twice that age, and they live in a much different environment. It's very, very harsh. They live on mountaintops between 9 and 11,000 feet, and it's incredibly dry. So the trees grow incredibly slowly. So they don't get that big. A 3 foot tree, 3 feet, could be 300 years old. That's how slow they grow.
Okay.
It can take 100 years for 1 inch.
You're missing our stunned looks. Like, we're like, what? 300 years to grow 3 feet?
Yes. And then as they're growing so slowly, they live in this harsh environment with, you know, wind blowing and snow and ice all winter. And the soil is very gritty. It's like made out of stone. It's actually white soil. The soil is white because it's made from a rock called dolomite.
Right. Okay. And that I know.
So what happens is when it's windy and over thousands of years, it like sandblasts the trees. So they have all these like really twisty shapes. Okay. So some of the oldest trees have exposed heartwood. That means that the very center of the tree, you can see it with your eyes. It's exposed now. It's on the outside. So how did that happen?
Right.
All the wood that grew after it has been eroded away or sandblasted away by wind and ice storms. And so for thousands of years, it wears away. So your question of, aren't they huge? No, they're not huge because a lot of their wood has been lost to the environment.
Oh, wow.
But they still have enough living wood to support the growth. And another interesting thing, because of that, scientists have to take more than one core. They can't just core the tree
because
they might only get to, they might not get all the way to the heartwood on that core. So they have to take maybe 5 or 6 cores on the same tree from different angles. And then they find the patterns of the growth rings.
Right.
And they line them up so there's overlap.
Right.
Yes.
That makes sense?
Yep.
Yes.
And then they count. So the oldest tree in the world before the first oldest tree they discovered in the 50s, the scientist who discovered it took these cores and he was in a tent in the mountains of California where the tree lives. And he had a lantern and a microscope. And he stayed up all night counting the rings until he got to like 4,000. I don't know the exact number.
Oh my gosh.
But 4,789 rings.
Oh my gosh.
So that's how he figured out that these, the bristle cones, were the oldest trees in the world. And since then, they now have evidence that there are 5,000-year-old trees living in that same area in the California White Mountains.
Wow.
I was just about to ask, are all of these oldest trees in the same area? Like, are they growing in the same sort of grove or on the side of the same mountain?
Yes. So when I did my research, I visited 2 places where they're called ancient bristlecone pines, where they grow.
Okay.
The White Mountains in California is one of the places I went, and where the Methuselah tree, that's the oldest, that was the 4,789 tree named after the oldest person in the Bible. That tree is kept secret. Scientists do not tell anyone where the oldest tree is because they don't want people to come around and like take a souvenir, you know, take a branch or a pine cone or something. But around that area, there are other even older trees. And then also in Nevada, at Great Basin National Park, there's another grove of bristlecones that are extremely old. And there are bristlecones in ancient bristlecone pines in Utah and in Colorado near where you live, Jeff. But you'd have to go up in the mountains. And those are a little bit different species. They're not the really long-lived ones, the ones in Colorado.
Okay.
So
that's fascinating.
They're very limited. Yeah, they have to live in very harsh, high altitude, dry environments in order to live for so long. It's kind of counterintuitive, right?
Right.
I mean, exactly.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so I have a question. We're going to go back to, so they do sometimes drop their needles, is what you're saying. Does that mean the tree is bare while it's regrowing needles? Or?
Oh, that's a great question. No, because they don't all fall off at once, like on deciduous trees. Like, you know, they'll fall off maybe on one bundle and then grow a new, you know, so it's, you never would see a pine tree without any needles. If you did, it would be dead.
Yeah. Well, I was imagining, you know, like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree, right?
Right. But that was still alive. And that's kind of similar to a bristlecone because bristlecones are mostly dead trunk. that supports this very thin ribbon or strip of living wood. Yeah. If you go on my website, you can see some pictures that I took. They're pretty amazing to look at.
Very cool. So when scientists take a core of one of these ancient Bristol cones, in looking at the core, can they tell the difference between the part of the tree that's still alive and the dead wood that is part of the trunk surrounding it?
Yeah, yeah. And most of it is dead. So yeah, but they could tell the difference between... And the old wood is really dead.
Okay.
Well, the way the tree transports water and sap is going to be the living part of the tree, like the part that's actually growing outward. So under the bark is where the living part of the tree is. It's called the cambium.
Okay. And
so that's alive. But like if you like look at just a tree out your window and you see that it's just a trunk, the inner part of that tree are really just, it's wood. And it's really just like pipes. Think of it as like water pipes.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's a great analogy.
Yeah. And so the tree pipes water up from the ground. And it pipes sap down to the roots because the roots need food too.
Sure.
Right? So there's an up and down flow of water and sap inside of the tree. But the parts that's actually the cells, right? Because every living thing is made of cells.
Yes.
The dividing cells are really just right growth comes from. So every year you get a new layer of cells and those are your growth rings.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, so how did you find out about the bristlecone trees? I'm just curious. Do they have pine cones? I wanted to ask about that too.
Oh, yes, of course. All pine trees have pine cones. Well, I found out about the bristlecones because I was watching Nova, that TV show.
Science stuff. Yay.
From Boston.
Yeah. Yes. WGBH. And so I was watching Nova and they had a special about the Methuselah tree. And it was like just mind-boggling. Like I was like, oh my God, a tree that old?
Yes.
I just became obsessed. I said, I have to see those trees. Like I have to go there. And so I did. And I had a research grant to take pictures and to write a book. And that's how this book came out. But I learned a lot more than when I went to see them than, you know, I would have just learned about from reading a book or doing research because I did get to see the pine cones. And so when you think of bristlecone, right, bristlecone, their name. So the pine cones are these red pine cones with incredibly sharp spikes covering the whole thing. So like they're bristle, but they're like if you touch them, it would be like, yeah, they're really spiky.
Wow.
And those are the female cones.
Okay.
So there's male and female cones because a lot of people may not realize this, but plants and trees have male and they have female. So the female cones are the cones that make the seeds.
Yes.
And they are the ones that have the spikes on them and they're purple colored. Scientists think they're purple because it helps them to retain heat. And they live in this cold, harsh
environment.
But when I was out there in the White Mountains, I found a bristlecone that had green cones on them. And it turns out a very small number of them have green cones, and that's a genetic mutation.
Huh.
So, you know, few of them are green, but almost all of the female cones are this deep purple color. And so, you know, those are usually higher up on the tree. Wait a minute. I think I don't want to get this mixed up. The male cones are also can be on the same tree, but they're much smaller and they're bright red and they are packed with pollen. So there's a very powdery yellow pollen, which is carried by the wind all over the forest. And that, just like with a flower, they are flowers actually, when you think about it, the female cone gets pollinated. And then it takes at least a year and a half for the seeds to grow.
Hmm.
The pollen kind of just stays inside the cone. And then the cone goes over the winter time. And then the actual coming together of the pollen and the egg cell inside the female doesn't happen right away. It happens so that the timing is right for when the seed comes off of the pine cone, which is usually in the fall.
I mean, that makes sense. They take 5,000 years to grow. Of course, it's going to take a year and a half.
Just thinking the same thing, Jen.
Yeah. And what's amazing is on this oldest tree, the Methuselah, you know, scientists took a pine cone from that tree and a seed, and they planted it at the Smithsonian, and it grew. So, wow. You know, almost 5,000-year-old tree is still reproducing. It's still making seeds that can grow into new trees. So they don't die.
Apparently not.
They don't die from, like, no, the only way they would die is if maybe they got attacked by insects. Rarely there's spiders that could kill them. And sometimes there might be a fungus in the ground, like that would cause their roots to rot. But that's rare. But scientists have discovered that they do not die from being old.
Okay. That's good. Geez, I wish they could find that out about us. So I know we're getting close.
Well, I think they're working on it.
Yeah, that's true.
I know we are getting closer and Jen's about to be asking you about your challenge. Before that happens, I want to ask you one more question about your book, about the Bristol cone tree and the oldest trees in the world. Okay. Without giving away any secrets, what is something that is in your book that kids are going to be fascinated about when they learn it?
I've already told you a few of those things.
Okay.
So I've already given away some of the secrets. And actually, the book starts out kind of like with a satellite view of the bristle cones. Even though it's an illustrated book, that picture was the bristle cones. So my book starts out with, there are secrets down there. And so there's a lot of secrets in the book. You know, ranging from how the tree grows, how we know how old it is. Oh, I know one thing. One of the things I mention in the book, and I don't go into a lot of details, but kids could do some research on this if they wanted to find out about it, is you can tell from looking at tree rings if there was a solar explosion or a sun flare.
Ooh.
Oh. So they have pinpointed the years of solar flares going back hundreds and thousands of years based on signals in the tree rings.
That is cool.
That's
very cool.
Also, one more thing is there's a signature in the tree rings called a frost ring that shows that the tree stopped growing during the growing season. So like in spring, when it's supposed to be growing, all of a sudden in that year, it stopped growing.
Oh.
And the wood is damaged. And so what that signifies is there was a volcano somewhere on the planet, huge volcano that blocked out the sun for months during the
growing. Oh my gosh.
So looking at tree rings, you can actually match the tree ring to the dates of different huge volcanoes throughout history.
That's just incredible. It is. It's incredible.
Isn't it? So, I mean, I could go on and on about tree rings. They teach us so much.
We're all going to have to get and read your book.
We learn about climate history.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's not a long book. It's pretty short, really. But it's enough to get kids' interest. I think you want to know more.
Well, tell us where you can find the book and your publisher. And of course, give us your website, please.
Okay. So my book is published by Web of Life Books.
Okay.
That's a small publisher out of California. And it's on Amazon. Anywhere you get books, you can order it.
Okay.
And my website is just my name, alexandrasai.com. And also, if you Google bristleconebook.com, it'll take you to my website. Bristleconebook.com, it'll take you right to my website that has a lot more information. There's a lot of STEM activities based on tree rings. There's some videos, you know, there's a lot of resources. The publisher has lesson plans.
That's fantastic.
Really good. Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So now I'm very curious because we always ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. What is your challenge, Alexandra?
So I think that the challenge should be to go outside and try to find a pine tree.
Mm.
Now, you know, a pine tree, you know, has needles on it. Right?
Yes.
And so if you can find one, it would be great to take a picture and definitely take a picture of the needles and you can count how many needles are in a bundle. That will help identify the tree. So bristle cones have 5 needles in a bundle. White pines also do. But like a red pine has a different number. So go out, take a picture of the needles, count the needles, and then try to find a female cone. Those would be the ones on the ground that you're used to seeing, like the long ones. Yeah, and see if it's open, you might be able to find a seed inside. If it's open, a lot of times birds and animals will have already eaten the seeds.
Right.
But if it's a newer
cone,
you might be able to, you know, get a seed. So that's my challenge, is to go out and try to identify a pine tree. See if you can figure out what kind it is.
Oh, I like it.
Probably not a bristle cone, though.
Hopefully not. I don't know if I want to live in those conditions.
Which then also makes it a challenge, because we've been talking so much about those. All of our listeners will have to go do a little research of their own to match up what they found with what it is.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun. This has been fabulous. I have learned so much about trees. Thank you for being on Salt for Kids, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. It was fun.
Man, that deep dive was one of the most fun we've had when we haven't gone into water. Learning about the ages of trees and learning so many different details about the trees that are in a whole lot of our neighborhoods. That was so much fun. I'm not going to look at my neighborhood walking around the same way again. What about you, Jen?
No, me either. And I love that, you know, you can find trees and study about trees wherever you live, right?
Yes.
It's not necessarily about learning the trees in your area, which is really cool. But also when you go on vacation or you go different places, you can notice the trees that are there and kind of think about them. And also hunt for pine cones, which I used to do as a kid because I grew up in Central Illinois.
Yes. There is hunting for pine cones, collecting them. I know kids make money in my neighborhood picking up all of the pine cones.
Oh, yeah, we did
just
that
to clear them out, to fill up those bags. A nice little side job for my daughter and her friends. That's a lot of fun.
I used to do that.
But I am betting there's a whole lot of listeners that did not know that there are male and female, and there are so many differences that we can tell. So everybody needs to go out and do Alexandra's challenge.
Yep.
Jen, what do you think?
Yeah, I think absolutely. That is a fun challenge. And if you do the challenge and you take a picture of yourself with your pine cone or just a pine cone, make sure you tag us on our social media. We are at KidsSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And also be sure to check out our website, which is solveitforkids.com, where we'll have more information and pictures of the bristlecone tree that Alexander is talking about.
Yes, the oldest tree that humans have ever found. How cool is that?
Yep.
So listeners, you may not have the oldest tree in your neighborhood, but definitely get involved. Show us your pictures and videos. And until our next episode, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on Solve It for Kids.